access to that algorithm. And so I think that caller...
Want to take that caller off the air? There's some background noise going on.
Getting some music there. Is that the...
Oh, that's me.
Oh, is that you? So anyway, we're getting some background music. But yeah, I think that's an excellent point. We still didn't remember the different ways in which we can take on the system and what power we have. And we did get Jimmy Kimmel back on the air, which is one victory. But we need to continue, let the corporations know that they cannot take, they cannot partner with authoritarianism to make a buck.
Looks like we're about out of time. Thanks for everybody to called, and thank you, Ty. And that was Jesse Wells, by the way, who started us off. I don't know where we're going to go out with Jesse. Bye, everybody.
Okay.
Purpose in the current circus, if you're seeking respect and attention. If you're in need of a gig that'll help you feel big, come with me and put some folks in detention. Just last week was kinda rough, I put a kid in cuffs and zip-tied a woman to a van. We can sneak around town hunting working folks down, I hear they get a great benefit plan. Join ICE, boy ain't it nice. Join ICE, take my advice. If you're lacking control and authority, come with me and hunt down minorities. Join ICE. Well, I failed the academy, the cops weren't having me, the army didn't sound that fun, so I found me a pair of...
This is KBOO Portland, listener-powered, non-corporate community radio.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Executive Committee meets on the second Thursday of the month at 6 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting virtually can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
Welcome to Sprouts, radio from the grassroots, a weekly program that showcases radio production by independent community media. We bring local stories to a global audience, produced at a different location every week.
I know immigration is not a topic that is comfortable, but we need to have this conversation.
I haven't had the chance to speak to anyone who is affected by it at all.
I'm Maeve Conran with KGNU, and today on Sprouts, we hear a selection of stories from Modus Theatre in Boulder, Colorado. Modus creates original theatre to support community conversation. They specialise in autobiographical stories of people who are often underrepresented, misrepresented, or dehumanised in the media. Today, we'll hear a monologue from their Immigrant America series, and a story from their Shoebox Stories podcast, where prominent Americans stand in the shoes of Modus monologuists with the DACA status, that's Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals. They read aloud their stories, saying their words, and feeling the weight they carry. First, we'll hear an Immigrant America monologue from Modus Theatre's Laura Peniche. It's called Wandering in the Desert. In it, Laura appeals to her fellow Christians to reflect on the impact of anti-immigrant policies on undocumented families in light of Jesus' love.
I need to talk to my fellow Christians today, my brothers, my sisters. I know immigration is not a topic that is comfortable, but we need to have this conversation. Because you may not know I'm in pain right now, and that you may be, perhaps without realizing it, contributing to my pain. I share my heart knowing that you are good people, I have seen you help out at church and the shelter, care for the elderly. I have seen you bring food to the homes of people in need. And I know that most of you don't really mean for all undocumented immigrants to be deported. So I don't understand why so many of you support leaders who promise to deport parents like my mom and my dad. Many of my brothers and sisters of faith tell me I don't have to worry because they will be there to support me and that they would never let anybody take me personally. But some of those same people are helping to elect leaders who have the intention of separating families by deporting millions of parents who are just trying to provide for their families. I know we often get disappointed by our politicians because they don't fulfill their promises. In this case, I know many Christians are actually counting on our elected officials not delivering on promises to deport all undocumented immigrants. But these hopes are not enough for me right now. When I'm being told that I need to fill out an emergency plan for my children's school in the event that immigration enforcement picks me up, the thought alone of this possibility is forcing me and my children to live in so much pain and anxiety. I really don't want my children to be taken into foster care, left up for grabs to a destiny without a mother. There is a teaching in the New Testament about a woman who was about to be killed by a mob because she had broken a law. But despite her transgressions, Jesus stood up for her. He challenged those who had never committed a sin to throw the first stone. And so there was nobody who was able to throw a stone at that woman. And she lived. Of course, many Christians feel my family and I made a huge mistake by coming here undocumented. But if you know me, you know we didn't come here to cause harm. We were hungry. We needed bread. We were thirsty. We needed water. We were being persecuted. And we chose life and freedom. I want you to know, from what I have seen in my community, most people who are undocumented cross the border just like my family, trying to survive. We would have chosen a safe and legal path without wandering in the desert, without freezing nights, without the cactus and thorns digging into our feet, without the threats of robbers and smugglers, without carrying tired little children for miles and miles, if there would have been another way. I also know from my personal experience that we were not alone. We were being held by God's hand into this country. When I see those beautiful, healthy, happy faces of my children, I know that I was meant to be here. And I am so grateful to be part of my community and our country. But I cannot sit next to you at church anymore in silence while watching my friends and family get deported back across the desert that we risked everything to cross, to be called harmful names, told that we can live in the shadows and pick the fruit, but we cannot eat the fruit. And told that because we were born in another country, even if we were raised here, that we cannot sit at the table with other Americans. And told that this country will not accept us, no matter how hard we work, no matter how much we give. There are too many families suffering, being separated. Too many refugees in this country. They're being sent back to those deadly conditions that they escaped. There are too many of us devastated by the pressing circumstances around us, like watching the little children in cages, exposed to abuse, the tear gas in the eyes of mothers and fathers at the border, the realization that at any moment, our beautiful lives as we know them could be over. I find guidance in the teachings of Jesus and in the way he stood up in front of a mob to save a life. I pray that my fellow Christians will stand with me against cruel anti-immigrant policies. Help me save the lives, my family, my friends, and all the parents who are just trying to provide for their families. If you believe in Jesus, you know that Jesus loves you. So when you think of my children, my family, and all the undocumented immigrants of this country, please remember God's commandment that we should love one another the same way that he loves us. Everyone makes mistakes. I have, you have, and I believe our leaders do too. But we always have the choice to learn from our mistakes and stand together in God's love. Thank you.
That was a monologue from Laura Panice, a monologuist with Modus Theatre in Boulder, Colorado. Find out more about Laura's story and listen to other monologues at modustheatre.org. That's M-O-T-U-S theatre.org. You're listening to Sprouts, radio from the grassroots, a weekly program bringing you local radio productions of global interest. I'm Maeve Conran with KGMU in Colorado, and today on Sprouts, we're hearing a selection of stories from Modus Theatre. They're based in Boulder, Colorado, and they create original theatre to support community conversation. They specialize in autobiographical stories of people who are often underrepresented, misrepresented, or dehumanized in the media. Next, we'll hear an excerpt of an episode of their Shoebox Stories podcast, where prominent Americans stand in the shoes of Modus monologuists with DACA status, that's deferred action for childhood arrivals. They do this by reading aloud their stories, saying their words, and feeling the weight they carry. Here's the artistic director for Modus, Kirsten Wilson.
Our guest reader is award-winning actor, author, musician, and singer John Lithgow, best known for his television roles as Dick Solomon in the comedy Third Rock from the Sun, Arthur Mitchell in the drama Dexter, and Winston Churchill in The Crown, for each of which he won Primetime Emmy Awards.
We're in a moment of crisis, a crisis of empathy in this country. And it seems to me that the whole thrust of this project is to address that crisis.
He will be reading the story of Irving Reza, a political science major with DACA who uses humor to negotiate the fear he must face every time he passes through an immigration checkpoint, and how this experience deepens his reverence for the U.S. Constitution and the Bill of Rights. And now, John Lithgow reading Irving Reza's story, The Most Beautiful Monument.
On an annual basis, I go to El Paso, Texas, to see my grandmother. My problem is not that I must go to El Paso. It's when I return home to Colorado, I have to pass through an immigration checkpoint. The U.S. has CBP checkpoints, usually within 100 miles from the border. CBP stands for Customs and Border Protection. Everyone calls them the Border Patrol, but the agents don't like that. They're really sensitive people. The name Border Patrol hurts their feelings. Sometimes when you're stopped, they want to search your vehicle. It all depends on the agent and the time of day. If you have too much luggage, that might be suspicious, as you could be trying to smuggle something. If you are carrying a reasonable amount of stuff, that might be suspicious, since you could be trying to pass off as a normal traveler. If you're traveling without luggage, that too might be suspicious, since you could be traveling in a hurry. Don't make me talk about passengers. That might be suspicious. One night, when I was heading to Denver after passing through Las Cruces, I stopped at the checkpoint and gave them my EAD, my DACA employment authorization document. The officer asked me where I was going. Me, to Denver. Officer, why are you going there? I live there. How long were you in El Paso? I actually started to count the days. If I arrived on Friday night, and today is Thursday night, does that count as a full day? The officer wasn't really interested in my answer. He just wanted reason to search the trunk of my car. I felt that I had no choice. I said, yes. I pressed the button on my 2004 Cavalier to open the trunk. It being a junker with 200,000 miles, the trunk door opens, but it doesn't pop up. It has to be lifted up every time. Opening it with a key is quite the puzzle. Really old car. The officer asked again, please open the trunk. It is open. You just have to lift it. I imagined the officer thinking, oh, this is too much trouble. Sir, get out of the car. We're going to use the search dogs. I got out and waited there in the open. It was pitch black, except the areas surrounded by the floodlights. It was also dead silent. I could see where the light ended and where the void began. Although I couldn't see anything in the dark, I knew there were hidden shrubs, sand, critters, and immigration. I waited under the watchful eye and close surveillance of five officers, as if I was capable of beating them up and making a dramatic escape. I waited in a resting stance, slightly bent knees, hands on my waist, relaxed elbows, steady breathing, and looking at them without looking at them. Otherwise, I could learn how many immigration officers it takes to screw a Mexican. The officer with the search dog asked me out loud, does the passenger door open? Yes, you just have to unlock it from the inside. Cavalier 2004, manual lock, rolling windows, busted dashboard, $1,500. The officer told me that I could get going. He then asked, your trunk closes, right? Yeah. After that experience, I always wonder as I approach a checkpoint if they're going to search my car. Sometimes they just take my ID and that's it. Other times they don't even stop anyone and I keep on going. Officer 1, are we going to stop anyone today, dude? Officer 2, nah, I just really don't feel like it. Last year, after going to El Paso, I decided to visit White Sands National Monument. I made a right turn in Las Cruces and drove until I reached the checkpoint. I always have my ID ready, and I gave it to the officer. Officer, where are you coming from? Me, from El Paso. Where are you going? To the monument. Why are you going there? To see the monument. Can I search your car? When she asked to search my car, I remembered a conversation that I had with Victor Galvan, who leads immigrant rights trainings. I told him about my previous experience. He asked me why I let them search my car. I don't know. He told me to exercise my rights the next time I passed through a checkpoint. So in response to the officer's question, I said no. The officer took a step back and went to talk to her supervisor. I usually don't look at them if I'm not talking to them, since I don't want to look mean at them. The officer came back and asked me if they could search my trunk. Is it truly necessary? Just answer the question, sir. No. The officer went back to talk with her supervisor. I assume they did not really expect that kind of response. I imagined their conversation. Officer, he said no to searching the car. What do I do now? It's not supposed to be this way. Supervisor, okay, what if you ask him again and see if he flinches this time? Sir, I asked him again and he said no again. Well, we can impound his car and search it later. A cavalier. We have standards here. Let him go. I was permitted to move on. And in a few miles, I reached the monument. Once I got to the monument, I went to their checkpoint. The attendant said, "Welcome to White Sands National Monument. Would you like a day pass or a season pass?" "I'll take the day pass." "Thank you. Here is a map and your car sticker. Enjoy your stay." When I'm at a CBP checkpoint, I always figure that they will stop me, search me, and shake me up a bit. I've not heard of any DACA recipient being arrested or beaten at a checkpoint, which doesn't mean that it hasn't happened and that I won't be the one it happens to. But if the agents think either I or my car look suspicious, that could be it for me, whether I'm guilty or not. Even spending a single day in detention could mean losing my DACA status, and that would be a disaster. But that day, near Las Cruces, 50 miles from the Mexican border, I was stopped at a checkpoint, and I exercised my rights. And my rights, as written in the Constitution, were respected. For many Americans, the Constitution is something they might take for granted. But that day, when my rights were respected and the Bill of Rights was honored, I experienced the most beautiful national monument America has ever created. That's for you, Irving.
Thank you.
Wow. Beautiful, John. What was it like to read Irving's story directly to him?
I just loved it. It's just such a wonderful, honest piece of writing. And what I love about it is it's so humorous. Whenever something that's that intense is recalled after the fact, a long time after the fact, by which time you've sort of come to internalize it, accept it, adapt to it as a part of your history, it becomes very kind of ordinary and prosaic. And the difference between the intensity of what happened and how kind of straightforward and simple it is in the retelling is to me what makes it so moving. And that's how it struck me reading it.
John, what moment in Irving's story most impacted you while reading it?
There is a sentence I was permitted to move on. To me, those five or six words are overwhelming because you just feel the relief. And everyone can connect with that. Everyone knows what it's like to realize, oh, I'm going to be okay. I just thought it was incredibly beautiful. And the timing of it, you just, I don't know whether you consider yourself a writer or not, but that's just great writing.
Thank you. Sometimes I wonder if maybe I chose the wrong career.
Like, yes, exactly. Well, you have to promise me that you'll keep writing.
Yes.
Because this is just beautiful. And I say that as an actor who knows good material when he sees it. You know, when Kirsten asked me to do this, told me about you, told me the story, and sent me the video of you, I hesitated. I thought nobody should tell Irving's story except Irving. But I wanted to help out Kirsten and the Modus Theater Project because it seems to me very, very important. And I also thought, well, maybe this is just exactly what I should do, because the whole challenge here is to get people to walk in the shoes of immigrants and get some connection with what they have to go through. So actually, maybe it's a very theatrical and powerful thing to do. Maybe Kirsten had a brilliant idea here. The more different I am from you, the more it highlights the intensity of your experience. We all have all had the experience of worrying about being in trouble. But I have never had to live through the experience of going through one of those checkpoints. And you talk about it with such humor and irony, as if it was an amusing thing that happened to you. But it's so clear, there was nothing amusing about it when it was happening. In its way, it helped me experience what you experienced. And that's exactly what all of us have to do and concentrate on. We're in a moment of crisis, a crisis of empathy in this country. And it seems to me that the whole thrust of this project is to address that crisis. But I think it's a wonderful thing to partner you and me and to make my reading of your story a companion piece to yours. It's my way of walking in your shoes.
Thank you.
Irving, what was it like to have John Lithgow read you your own story?
It was as intense as the heat was when I went to the National Monument. Like, I could just feel all the energy and radiation, just yes. Like if I was there again.
Well, I choose to take that as a compliment.
Before we end, I'm going to ask you both to take a few breaths and just see if there are any last words you would want to say.
Yeah, I got something.
Mm-hmm.
Once again, this year I went to El Paso. I have heard from people that the checkpoints were closed, and I went there to see it myself, and they were closed. And then I went again later, and they were still closed. So was it all for nothing? Like, if it's so important that they have to stop everybody to see if they're dangerous or not, and then they just close it for most of the year, like, why are we doing this?
Mm-hmm. Well, I didn't know what to expect coming here this morning. It was a wonderful experience to sit here 5 feet from you and read it out loud to you as a way of telling you how much it means to me. I mean, I've been following the crisis at the border for the last 2 or 3 years as it's become more and more of a hot button issue in our country and in our society and in our politics. But in all this time, I haven't had the chance to speak to anyone who is affected by it at all. I've been so alarmed by what's going on, but this is the most connected I've felt to what's going on, and I'm very grateful for that. I admire your courage.
Thank you.
It's wonderful to act in something where you really feel you're helping to change people's minds or widen their consciousness and change the world. Even if it's in a little tiny way.
You can watch a video of Irving reading his own story on our webpage, shoeboxstories.org, or hear him read it to John Lithgow on our companion podcast, Modus Monologues on DocuAmerica series. We hope you will share Irving's story with your friends and family so everyone knows the people whose lives are at stake in U.S. immigration policy.
That's it for Sprouts. You've been listening to a selection of stories from Modus Theater in Boulder, Colorado. Find out more about their work at modustheater.org. That's MOTUS theater.org. Special thanks to Modus's artistic director, Kirsten Wilson, monologuist Laura Pniche, and actor John Lithgow, all featured in today's show. The Sprouts theme music is Torpedoes on Tuesday by Poison Control Center. Sprouts is a weekly program produced in collaboration with community radio stations and independent producers across the globe. The program is coordinated and distributed by Pacifica Radio. If you or someone at your station has a radio production that you wish to showcase globally on Sprouts, contact our air traffic controller, Ursula Rudenberg, at ursula@pacifica.org. That's ursula@pacifica.org. I'm Maeve Conran with KGNU. Thanks for listening, and see you next week on Sprouts.
Klein, and you are listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM.
Hey, stuck in a slump? Sometimes you gotta shake it out.